We want to welcome everybody to Veterans Radio today on WAAM 1600 Talk Radio, WAAM in Ann Arbor. I am Jim Fossone. I'm your host today on Veterans Radio, and we have two great programs to inform you about, one being Roush Industries and what they do for veterans in the employment space. And after the bottom of the half hour, we'll talk to the founder and a co-owner of Shoemaker Pingree Detroit. It employs veterans to make footwear and other products manufactured here in the Motor City. So sit back and enjoy these discussions on WAAM 1600 AM. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today John Gardner, a retired Master Sergeant from the United States Air Force. John, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well,
it's great to be on.
Yeah, we're glad to have somebody with your experience. Maybe you can provide some pearls of wisdom here. You served 24 years or so in the United States Air Force, and then now are in the business world. You're the manager of the Veterans Program Initiative for Roush Industries, which is a very diversified company. We'll talk about it a little bit, but before we do, let's start with how did a nice guy like you end up in the Air Force for 24 years?
Great question. You know, I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio. I was just a young guy growing up, was a pretty good student, but not very serious about, like, going to college. And so, you know, back then my parents, it was either one or two things. You either were going to go to school and get a degree, or you were going to go into the military. I chose the latter, and you know, off my career went. I truly believe that, you know, had I went to college, I wasn't prepared mentally to do what it took to finish the bachelor's up in 4 or 5 years. But the military provided some structure for me early on in my life, and it very well helped me to be where I am today.
Well, John, did the family have a history of military service when you were given those two choices? You know, were they trying to nudge you one way or the other?
You know, not my immediate family, but I did have some folks in on my mom's side of the family. My granddad was a World War II vet. I had some uncles that served on my dad's side, and so, you know, like, not close to me, but I did know that my family had some history. But like, my dad never served, my mom never served, but I think that, you know, like most parents back then, you know, they saw the military as an outlet to get away from, like, the situation that I was in growing up in inner city Cleveland, just an outlet to better myself.
Well, you certainly took advantage of that. We'll talk about your military career in a moment, but since we're talking about this, the educational choice, do I go in the military or do I go to college? Mm-hmm. You know, I give a lot of credit to guys like you who could recognize, hey, I'm not ready now, but I need to do it. And
absolutely.
Veteran radio listeners, were talking to somebody who went so far as to get a master's degree
from
Central Michigan University. But you started, I think, the way many kids ought to start, which is, in this instance, you went to the Community College of the Air Force before getting your bachelor's from Ashford University. Talk a little bit about that inner drive to keep getting the education, notwithstanding you were in a good spot in the Air Force with good pay and all the responsibilities that go with it.
Right. Well, one of the good things about the military is it's kind of competitive. You have to compete for your rank. And as I was going through my career, you know, even though I knew that school was important, you know, it never really hit me until it was almost time to get out. And that's when I said, you know, I have to still be competitive when I get out of the military for some of the jobs that I would want to go to and compete for. And so those required education, and that's why I was one of those guys who got my education later on in life. And truly, I do believe this. Had I tried to do it when I was younger, I probably would have discouraged myself and maybe never went back to school. But then when I did go as an adult, I was more focused. I knew what I wanted. I knew the career path that I wanted to take when I got out of the military. And so that was something that helped me get my mind right around the education piece. Quite a few veterans join the military and they never take any classes. They don't take advantage of the educational benefits. But I do believe that it is something that you should do when you're in. And even when you get out, you know, it's something like if you have that competitive spirit, you know where you want to go as far as your career, the educational background is something that you definitely should take advantage of, especially with our military programs, with the GI Bill, post 9-1-1, those types of things. You can get your education as a more seasoned professional, and I think you'll appreciate it a little bit more than you would have when you were 18, 19, 20 years old.
So you listen to the master sergeant here. He's giving you good advice. So let's
and that served me well.
Let's talk a little bit about maybe at the end of your 24 years, tell us what sorts of assignments that you had over that period of time.
While I was in?
Yes.
Yeah, so one of the things that I remembered about joining the military was my recruiter and how he made that transition from the civilian world into the military very easy for me. He gave me all of the information, and I made an informed decision based off of the things that he told me, and I trusted him. And I remember as a young man, when I first joined, I would always say, one day I'm gonna go back and be a recruiter like my recruiter. His name was Staff Sergeant Dixon. I still remember the guy. It's just almost 30 years. Matter of fact, 30 years to the day. I joined the military, 30 September 1988. So here we are 30 years later, and I can still remember that gentleman's name. And over my career, I would always say, I'm going to go back and be a recruiter. I'm going to go back and help others who were like me. And when I got closer to the end of my career, you know, I guess I was thinking selfishly because I wanted to help folks, but also selfishly I was thinking like I wanted to be somewhere where I would want to live. And so I used the recruiting world to take care of both things. I was able to help some high school students as well as some college graduates join the Air Force as enlisted folks, and then also some pilots and engineers and those types of things. So that is what kind of led me to where I am today. I spent the last 9 years of my 24 as an Air Force recruiter. And I learned, like, when you're a person that's talking to folks about career paths and career choices, like, when you're being honest with them and you're giving good factual information, it makes their transition easy. And I took the same approach, the way that I recruited high school students, as far as from dealing with parents and letting them know the information, helping kids pick career choices that were going to be best for them in the military and outside of the military. And I took that into the world that I'm in today. And that's one of the best things about working for a company like Roush, is I get to try to help people join a great company the same way I did with folks joining the great Air Force.
Well, before we get to talking specifically about Roush, I think there's some wisdom that I want to pass along based on your career experiences, because you were the Veterans Service Department Director for Wayne County, mm-hmm. Michigan for a few years, and then you had the opportunity to work for a great Detroit-based company, Quicken Loans, for a few years before moving on to Roush earlier here in 2018.
Right.
And I think one of the things that military members have a challenge with when they get out is this idea of moving from job to job till you find the one that's right for you.
Right.
And talk a little bit about what you saw in those other jobs that were attractive, but also why moving around is an okay thing too.
Absolutely. So for a person like myself who had did 24 years, I think that when I retired in 2012, my first job was with Quicken Loans. I had a great time at that company. We did some pretty cool things as far as around the veteran hiring space. I think the thing that I realized there, and this is from being around my civilian counterparts who work with me, I think the thing that I realized was, you know, being in the civilian world is not the same as the military. In the military, you have, you have your set day, you have your set career, you know, whether you're going to do 4 years or 8 years, 12, 15, 20, 24, 30, you know what you're going to be doing every day. And you pretty much stick with that. There, of course, there's some career changes while you're in the military, but pretty much you know you're going to be serving, in the military. When I got out, my first job was at Quicken Loans, and I actually thought that I would be there for another 24 to 30 years. And nothing against that company. It's a great company. But what I did learn was to get to a point where you were doing more and helping more, you had to move. You know, when I transitioned from Quicken Loans HR hiring vets at that company, then I was still in the veteran space, but I went to work for Wayne County, and that was more on the servicing side. So we were helping folks who, you know, maybe were down on their luck. They needed help with, bills, DTE bills, energy bills, maybe help on their rent. And then we were trying to help those veterans who maybe had gotten down on their luck. We were trying to help bring them back up. So the servicing industry is totally different from the hiring world. And then that was also a political appointed position. So that was totally different. Even though I was still helping veterans and doing everything that I could to help veterans, their family members, and that type of thing, it was totally different than the hiring world. I recognized that earlier in my first job out of the military that you have to move around to learn different things. And so when I was at Wayne County, I did that job for about 3 years. You know, I had a longing because I missed the hiring world. I think that is really truly where my passion was. But one of the things that I learned while I was working for the county was I learned that veterans is more than just a veteran. It's the family member. It's the dependent. It's the wife. It's the husband. If the husband is the spouse, you're trying to help family members just as well as you try to help the vet.
Well, I think that's, you know, you hit on the point. You know, we go into service and we put the uniform on every day, and we're, you know, our team is the Air Force or the Navy, the Army, Marines. When you get out, it feels a little disloyal to switch teams and move careers, but that's kind of normal in the civilian world, and you have to be comfortable with that, don't you?
It's most definitely normal. I believe, you know, and this is from personal experience, I believe that you become a better worker, leader, a better employee because you have worked in different areas for different companies, and you'll bring experiences that you've learned in those other places to your new job.
There's another issue that you've sort of touched on as you talked about moving from sort of the hiring world to the service world, still in the overall veteran world, and some of that comes out of networking, I suppose. And again, there's talk a little bit about the big difference of networking as it relates in the civilian world, as maybe there's a little less emphasis on networking in the military world.
Right. So when you're in the military, when you move from base to base, you really only deal with the folks on that base where you're stationed at. Whether you're there 2 years, 4 years, 5 years, you know, once you leave, you move to another whole base. And, you know, I never did this, but I think that this is typical of military members. You kind of forget the folks that you left because you're now here. You've moved from sunny Florida to wintry Michigan. So you kind of forget those folks that you left back in Florida, but now you're here in Michigan and you're really only dealing with the folks that you're here, that you're stationed with now. When you compare that to the civilian world, it's a little different because you should never forget anyone that you have come in contact when you've had some positive experiences or some negative experiences, because you could always come back to that person, whether it's for a job, whether it's for a recommendation, whether it's just to learn something different about how someone else does at a company that you were last at, or, you know, that type of thing. Now, it's funny, my jobs that I have been in since I've retired from the military, they all came from networking. When I heard about the Quicken Loans job, oddly enough, there was a lady who was working there who actually went to high school with my wife. That lady, her husband was a vet, and we used to talk about veteran things and veteran issues and that type of thing, but she was working at Quicken Loans, and at the time, Quicken Loans was saying, hey, we want to start a veteran hiring program. We don't know how to go about it. We don't know what to do. We don't know who to talk to. And this lady said, hey, I got a friend of mine. Her husband's about to retire from the military in like 3 months. And they said, well, we'd like to talk to him. And that's how I got an interview.
I really think that's one of the skills that folks coming out of the military are a little lacking in, is that networking ability.
Yes.
in the geographic network where they're going to reside, right? They haven't spent, maybe they spent the last 8 or 12 years moving around from base to base across the country, mm-hmm. and being overseas. But that means that that's 8 years that they didn't develop ties through Little League and
right.
church and service clubs and PTA meetings where they're networking those opportunities. So I think it's really important for them to realize, hey, I got to work on my networking skills. And certainly that's what you saw as it really helped you
yes.
along the way, didn't it?
Each job that I've had. And of course, now I applied for these positions and I competed and I interviewed and I was fortunate to receive the job offer. But initially, there was some networking involved. Even when I went to become Director of Veteran Services for Wayne County, my name was out there so much and I was connected to so many people doing what I was doing for the first company. The opportunity for Wayne County came up and I actually knew the guy who was in the job, and when he decided to leave, you know, I'm assuming that maybe he threw my name to someone, and I received a phone call saying, hey, this position is going to be opening up. We'd like for you to apply for it, and these are the dates it's going to be open. And when it was open, I applied, and I want to say that they maybe interviewed about 5 other folks, and I got the job. But had I not networked with the person prior to me, had I not networked with some folks who were in the veteran community, I would have never heard about that position. And it's the same with the one that I'm in now. I was actually speaking at a I was working for Quicken Loans at the time, and I was speaking at a career event where I was talking about building a veteran hiring program and the do's and don'ts and some of the mistakes that I had made at Quicken Loans and some of the wins that we had gained over the years. And the company that I work for now, they were there at that event. The director of HR was at the event, and she heard me speak. And so, I mean, after I spoke, I talked to her for about 45 minutes afterwards, and we talked about veteran hiring, and, you know, I recommended to her. I was actually doing some consulting work, and I didn't realize it, but I recommended to her. I said, hey, you need to hire a military veteran, someone who has retired from the military, who has some experience, someone who can go on a military base and command some attention around folks who are transitioning. You need to hire someone like that. And so she took my advice, and they hired someone. And so her and I, we kept in touch over the years. And it just so happened that, you know, the guy who was in the job before me, when he decided to leave, you know, she reached out to me and said, hey, you know, this position is going to be opening up. We'd like for you to apply. Same type of thing. And so I wasn't looking for a job at the time, but I did miss the hiring world, and I applied for the position. I came over and interviewed. I want to say they had about 5 or 6 candidates that they were looking at. And here I am today. So the networking piece does help out a lot, and it is. And you're right. To your point, you know, as veterans, we do need to learn to use our networks to help us move forward in careers outside of the military. It's a huge thing.
And there is a big veteran network of employers, entrepreneurs, just guys in business who
right.
will help out a veteran at a drop of a hat. And I think that's stronger today than it was a decade ago, but you do have to ask. You do have to, you know, yourself get out and get motivated, talk to folks and say, hey, I'm interested in this area or that space. Do you know anybody, any other veteran who might be in that space I can talk to? And you'll be surprised at how many people are willing to help. But let's talk about Roush now. It's a really cool company. that's been doing great things for years. But why don't you tell our veteran listening audience here, Master Sergeant John Gardner, who's now the HR manager for the Veteran Program Initiative, about the company and about your program.
Sure, sure. Roush is a major company in the automotive industry, but there's quite a few entities that fall up under the Roush umbrella. We have Roush Yates Racing. We have Roush Industries, which is who I work for, but we work closely with Roush Yates Racing. What we're looking to do is we're looking to help veterans that are transitioning from the military, as well as the ones who have been out for a little while. We're looking for folks in the mechanical area. We're looking for engineers. We do some pretty cool things. We do engineering of vehicles. We do fabrication. We also do prefabrication for future vehicles. So pretty cool company that has a large, huge range of things that we do. Some I can talk about, some I can't. But cool company that are looking to hire vets. And since the inception of our program a few years ago, we've hired close to 400 vets.
Wow, that's great success. And John, you know, Roush is involved, as you say, in automotive, but it's also aerospace and defense.
Yes.
And a lot of, I guess what I would call innovative or creative areas. So we would encourage anybody who kind of has that mechanical manufacturing aptitude and who's
right.
got some innovative, creative sparks in them to go check you guys out. What's the website for that?
Anyone who's interested in applying for a position with us, they can go to Roush.com, and you can just link to our careers page on there. Or they can contact me. You can shoot me an email at john.gardner, J-O-H-N, .garDner, at Roush.com. One of the cool things about my job is, you know, a vet just doesn't have to apply. They can work with me. I can do resume review. I can do some interview tips. I can kind of talk to them off the record, not off the record, but just kind of talk to them about the position that they're interested in, give them some background information. That's one of the cool things that everyone else doesn't get, right? So if you send me your resume and I take a look at it and I understand the position that you're applying for, I can maybe give you a call and say, hey, listen, you know, I noticed that you have on your resume that you've done this, but this position, it requires this skill set. Do you have that? And sometimes because we're so modest as vets, we may not put down everything that we've done. But if I can tell you, like, hey, you left this one particular thing off and this is going to be something that's going to help you get an interview, I need you to put that back on. I forward the email, the resume back to them, they fix that, and then they send it back to me, and then I'll tell them, hey, go ahead and apply. So it's some behind-the-scenes work that is being done to help our veterans get an opportunity, but I love that part of the job just as well as I do traveling to different bases and doing transition fairs. I love the one-on-one contact with someone who's like me, because I do recall that feeling when I was getting ready to get out of the military, and I hadn't done any job interviews, I hadn't worked on a resume or anything like that. And you know, when you've been successful, you're kind of nervous because you're thinking, I have to get out and be able to take care of myself and my family, and I may need a little help, and that's what I'm here for.
Well, this is great advice, and you're right. You've spent a lot of time in the military, you've been successful, and it's easy to feel like, what do you mean I got to prove myself again? But it's a whole new set of experiences, and I think oftentimes we hear about veterans who don't know how to translate their military experience into
right.
the job classifications or duties or type of work experience that the civilian world is looking for. So your ability to coach and help is invaluable, I would think, in that regards.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I thoroughly enjoy it.
Well, that passion comes through from a guy who spent 9 years as a recruiter. You can tell you're a people person and you want to make the link between the individual and the organization and help them see the value of each other. That's clear, John, and I can see why Roush is happy to have you. As we come towards the end here, tell us a little bit about you know, all this experience that you have, why do you think, and maybe why does Roush think, veterans make good employees?
You know, we talk about soft skills all the time. That's a buzzword that's thrown around a bunch, right? But it's true. Like, the soft skills is what really make veteran employees the best. One, we're going to be loyal, right? You give us an opportunity, especially when we felt like no one else would give us an opportunity. You give us an opportunity, we're going to come and we're going to be loyal and we're going to work as hard as we can for you because you took care of us and you gave us an opportunity. Veterans are going to come to work on time. I mean, it's in us. You know, we're going to get up every day. You know, like for me, I wake up every day without an alarm clock, and I'm here every day. And I enjoy my job so much that it doesn't matter what needs to be done, I'm going to do it, right? So veterans bring that aspect too. Veterans are respectful. Veterans work well with teams. And, you know, this is a team-oriented company. So it's those soft skills like that. Besides the technical skills, the soft skills is what makes veterans great employees, not just for Roush, but for any company in any industry. Veterans bring a certain skill set, and they actually, and I should say we actually will make a team better, because if there are some folks who may not work well with teams, they can learn from someone who has been in the military what it's like to work as a team. You know, they can learn from someone who has been in the military what it's like to be respectful of not just your leader, but also your peers. So it's those small things that, you know, as veterans, when we come to an organization, we make that organization better.
We want to thank John Gardner from Roush talking to us today about the value of veterans in the workforce. We want to encourage employers to continue to employ our veterans and certainly look for Roush Industries if it's an area that you might find interest in working. Stay tuned after the news. We have another very interesting program to talk about in the next half hour.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And welcome back to Veterans Radio on WHAM 1600 Talk Radio in Ann Arbor. We're glad to have you back to talk about an interesting program coming out of Detroit, Pingree Detroit. It employs veterans to make products, boots, sneakers here in the Motor City, but it's really designed to help veterans get, if you will, back on their feet with a good paying job, some skills, and some self-respect.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio this afternoon three gentlemen who are with Pingree Detroit. We've got Jarrett, we've got Cody, and we've got Nate. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, how are you doing? Good to be with you.
Jarrett Schleff, you're sort of the guy who had the light bulb idea of trying to find a way to put veterans to work, maybe those who had had some challenges they had to overcome. But why don't we talk about sort of how the idea came about to you in 2004 and how it led to Pingree Detroit?
Sure. So we started in 2014, kind of the fall of 2014. We got formalized in January 15. And then ever since I can remember, there have been folks in my community who have wanted to find and have living wage, meaningful work, and had difficulty. And to me, that doesn't work. And especially it doesn't work when it comes to veterans. And so we started with the mission of how can we create something in Detroit that is directly supporting that piece around both employment, but purpose-driven, meaningful employment, and, you know, making a living wage. And so I did not think I was going to start a manufacturing company 4 years ago when we started. It started out just with the vision of creating work and bringing together some people to make it happen. And so it started as an exploratory campaign of just actually sitting down with veterans organizations, nonprofits, veterans themselves, and saying, hey, you know, what kind of work do you want? What would make you inspired? Where do you want to be doing? And we found that folks want to work their hands. They want to make something that was high quality, representative of Detroit and kind of had this rugged, durable nature in this kind of comeback story that we're seeing in Detroit. And so we landed on footwear. We haven't done footwear since 1953 in Detroit, and we've never done sneakers. So now we have 4 years later, we have a team of 7 of us, 3 folks on the team are veterans, including one of my co-owners, and we're making sneakers using leather that's actually reclaimed and upcycled from the Detroit auto industry. So literally the same leather going into 2019 car seats and steering wheels, we take the best of that, and we turn into the first sneakers ever made in Detroit.
Well, Jared, it's a great story 4 years later, but I got to imagine that somewhere in the early months of this, somebody said, "Are you nuts?" So how did you overcome the, yeah, I know this sounds a little crazy, but it's, you know, let's keep pushing forward. What sort of propelled you along when you thought about what, you know, many would have called a crazy idea?
So it was more than a couple. It was hundreds of people. to start a manufacturing company alone with no upfront capital, and then to also do it creating footwear, which is, as we're seeing, everything's getting shipped overseas. The only thing that kept me going was holding true to the vision and knowing the impact I was going to be able to participate and create alongside other veterans. And so seeing the need, seeing an opportunity to not only just create work, but actually create products that are solutions. To create something that's sustainable, that actually benefits the community, that actually creates a model that doesn't just complain about a problem and maybe offers a small symptom fix, but actually looks at the root cause and how can we create this level of community within a company that benefits the surrounding community, especially veterans supporting other veterans and creating literal solutions with our products. And so just the vision of what it could be and knowing that anything is possible. And at the beginning, I had no idea how I was going to pull it off. I knew I had to develop a hell of a team, and I've been extremely lucky and frankly blessed to connect with folks who are a lot more skilled than I am when it comes to shoemaking and manufacturing and design and operations. So really, we have a strong team. We each bring our own skills to bear. And I'll let Ming and Cody tell you more about what they do as far as the craftsmanship is concerned.
Well, let me start with Nate Crawford. Nate, you're an Air Force vet. Tell us a little bit about your military background.
Okay. My first duty station, well, I joined in 2003. My first duty station was Dover, Delaware. And then after 4 months of being there, I was told I was in Afghanistan, Bagram, Afghanistan, and I was there for about 5 months. Came back to Dover, Delaware, and was from South Korea, Osan Air Base in South Korea. I was there for a year, and then I had orders for Andrews Air Force Base in Maryland. My career field was air transportation, journeyman. So we loaded up a lot of the aircrafts with a lot of cargo, a lot of smaller planes. We could put on big aircrafts. We chain them down. The president's motorcade, we would chain down on when he traveled out of Andrews Air Force Base. We dealt with the passenger terminal. So when we were overseas, you had Army guys, Marines going from their actual theater where they're actually in battle, where they would leave and go to maybe another, what they call R&R. We would ship them from where they were and ship them to an R&R, a rest and relaxation destination. We'd ship them there. So that was mainly my job, my duties. And
Nate, when did you get discharged?
2007, December 2007.
And how did you find the reintegration back into civilian life a bit challenging?
Yeah, it was quite challenging.
And were you from the Metro Detroit area? How did you end up back in Metro Detroit?
Yeah, born and raised in Detroit. Once I was out in the military, I was in Maryland for maybe almost about a year. I picked up a pretty good job at a plumbing company. I was a plumber's assistant. And once I wasn't able to keep up with my bills and my car note, that kind of put a damper in my work work availability, so I was able to, I guess, transfer back to the city where I had family and friends I could depend on a little bit more better, and it became more difficult to find work.
Well, I think a lot of veterans, as they transition out, also don't realize that, hey, I may go through various stages. And, you know, I had a job that was really secure for a number of years, but now I might be changing jobs or changing locations. And, you know, it's kind of a razor thin edge. You only have to get behind in a car note or a rent payment or medication, and all of a sudden it can become a bit of a challenge. Cody Teller, you're an Army veteran. Tell us a little bit about your military career.
Yeah, so I started in 2006. I was active for 5 years. I was in 173rd Airborne Brigade for 2.5 years, and then the 82nd Airborne Division for 2.5 years. There's actually 4th Brigade, 82nd. It doesn't exist anymore, but so I got out in 2011 off of active duty. I ended up doing 4 more years in the reserves. I reclassed. My active time was, I was an 11 Bravo infantryman, and then I reclassed in the reserves to a 35 Mike human intelligence collector. So I got out free and clear in 2009, I guess. No, I don't even know. 9 years after 2006, do the math.
And how was the transition for you from military life back to the civilian world?
I mean, it was challenging at times. You know, it's not anything that I didn't kind of expect, though. I knew going in that, you know, I kind of wanted to change. You know, when I went into the military, I wanted to experience something that would, you know, I wouldn't say open my eyes, but just, you know, make me realize, you know, how lucky we actually are to be here. That was, you know, a big objective of mine when I joined the military, part of it at least. So that was, I wouldn't say it was too extremely challenging, but yeah, there's definitely things that, you know, are tough, yeah, at times.
So, Jared, as you were beginning to put bones around Pingree, Detroit, which is a maker of leather goods, it's shoes, it's sneakers, it's got some bags. How did you decide, hey, the workforce I want is going to look like this, and Cody and Nate are going to help me get where this company needs to go?
Sure. So in one of my first careers out of college, actually, I worked for Senator Carl Levin. I was doing constituent services. He was a former Senate Armed Services Committee chairman, so he was extremely supportive of veterans. And some of the work I did was actually field concerns of veterans. I did veterans and immigration work as well as some energy policy. And I was getting so frustrated in that position, hearing all these different folks who were trying to get benefits, trying to get support, trying, you know, to just get some basic support from the VA. That was one of the elements, along with some good friends that I went to high school with that I was still close with who were coming back, who had some challenges. And then people I was actually meeting, you know, in 2014, I was meeting too many folks, specifically veterans, who wanted to work and couldn't find work. And that just, it started out with just kind of being pissed off and saying someone should do something about that. And then talking to a few folks, especially some veterans in my community, we decided, what can we do about this, right? What can we create? How can we directly address this? But also addressing the broader issue of community resilience and creating products that actually benefit the community and don't hurt us, right? And so we started with that question, what can we do, what can we create? And then, in designing a business, which we are a worker-owned company, but to create products that will last a lifetime, we're not doing anything really easy. Sneakers, footwear is not an easy task, so we need to be able to be an extremely focused, priority, mission-driven crew, and we have to create the world's most sustainable shoes. You know, that's not going to be easy to create community resilience and to create something that's never been done. And so we looked and saw a strong asset, you know, working with those who are experienced in that level of extreme focus, mission-driven nature, and so we saw a tremendous benefit to work alongside the folks who wanted to serve, and literally be embedded in the neighborhood that we want to be able to participate and support as well.
Well, you certainly had a great mentor in the senator. He's been a wonderful advocate for the military and the veterans of this country. Let me turn, though. Can you explain, you mentioned it, and I want to make sure we cover it. Can you explain what a worker cooperative is and how that impacts what Pingree Detroit does?
Of course. So with our model, every dollar that comes into Pingree, 77 cents of that dollar of profit is shared with the workers. And then there's another portion that's shared with the investors, another portion that's shared with the founders. And so after 1 year of working with Pingree Detroit, every veteran, every Detroiter is on a direct pathway to co-own the company. That looks like more support when it comes to decision making. That looks like actual participation in the profit sharing. So what that incentivizes is at every level of the company, you have folks who are looking for innovation, who are literal and figurative owners of different processes and different elements, so that different divisions all have that leadership at every level. And so in this current age of exponentially increasing globalization, mechanization, consolidation, and arguably exploitation when it comes to workforce, we see a direct way to combat that using a model that actually maximizes well-being for the worker, for the community, and for the customers that we're making products for.
Well, Nate, let me ask you this. You obviously, coming out of the military, it's a very top-down organization and not necessarily known for taking suggestions or advice from the airmen or the private up. How does it feel to be in a worker cooperative here at Pingree Detroit, where you're part, maybe part of the ownership structure, but more importantly, they want to hear what your thoughts are?
Yeah, it's a plus. It's a major change. It's well needed. I'm enthused about it because it brings up my creative past, my artistic past. I used to draw when I was younger. I hadn't drawn seriously in a while, but it gets you more involved in the work that you're doing. It's instant gratification. In the military, like I mentioned before, I was doing air transportation, so we would build a pallet, and I wouldn't see my work completed. Like, I wouldn't see when I'd shifted. I had to wait, like, until I went overseas. I was fortunate enough to go to Afghanistan where I'd sent something, and I'd seen the pallet built. So that instant gratification of working here and seeing what you've put your work into, and eventually you can be an owner in it, that's huge. The military had something small like that, where if you came up with a new idea how to simplify some of the operational tasks, they would give you credit for that, but that was few and far in between. It was real tedious too, but this is a advancement, and it's great for the community.
Now, Cody, let me ask, I know that Pingree has shoe wear, but it also, when I go to the website, it has some leather totes and a slim wallet card, those sorts of things. In your role, do you work on all the products, some of the products? Explain to me what the nature of your role would be then at Pingree Detroit.
Yeah, so primarily, Nate and I work on the footwear, but we do kind of cross over from time to time. You know, if we are behind on some orders that we need to fulfill, we might help out with some sewing or some cutting of the leather or assembly of the bags. But yeah, primarily we are on the footwear side. We do everything right here in-house. We by hand. There's no automated, I mean, we use sewing machines, but they're not automated. It's us actually using them. So we start with pieces of the shoe and like assemble them, sew them, and then, yeah, they're ready to go. So,
well, Jared, let me come back to some of your supporters and advisors in this project to get veterans good, solid jobs in something that they can build with their hands and feel proud of. I see that Lear Corporation is one of those sort of corporate providers. Can you talk a little bit about the support you get out of Lear?
Sure. So we work with a variety of partners across different sectors in the auto industry who share our enthusiasm for championing, you know, community-based work, especially with an emphasis on employment opportunities for veterans. We're in the production process as well as in the R&D process. There is unused, quote-unquote, scrap, right? There's stuff that didn't make the cut, and instead they're getting shipped overseas or occasionally landfilled. We take the best of that, and they actually, some is donated, some we buy, depending on the size of the pieces. But what that has allowed for, you know, again, we do a 10 to 12 week training program where Pingree has the complete risk of putting 12 weeks worth of training into folks who've never made anything footwear-wise in their life. And having scrap that we don't have to pay for training, having it for some of our smaller accessories, has allowed us to compete where otherwise it would have been, I would have had to raise a whole heck of a lot more capital. You know, from start to finish, we've gotten over $280,000 in in-kind contributions. So that looks like equipment. That looks like skilled technical assistance that, you know, we couldn't afford some of the legal advice in the early stages and developing our operating agreement and all of the small things that you don't necessarily know if you haven't started a business before. Just 3 years of prototyping costs. That would have been a heck of a lot more if folks didn't come out of the woodworks and really just want to see how they could support. So it's really been a community effort. We often say that relationships have been one of our strongest currencies because, you know, if you share with enough people and you tell folks the vision and they're down with what you have to create, you know, a lot of things are possible that you wouldn't think otherwise seeing the way how to make it happen.
Could you identify some of those other folks? Let's give them a shout-out that have provided that kind of support because you can't take this kind of effort on and make – real change without some real help.
Of course, yes. So the Center for Community-Based Enterprises has been invaluable. C2BE.org, I think, is the website. We've gotten support from GM, from the Renaissance Center, from Shinola, has provided us some technical advice and kind of critique and expertise. Wilbur Worldwide provided us, as well as Bates, provided us really high-level feedback on our early designs back in 2015. Tom Carbone, Steve Schock, Cynthia Montague, I could probably name 100 names, literally, but it's truly, Insight Focus is one of the biggest ones as well. That's what we do a lot of our laser cutting. They're a community-based enterprise. So it has been a community. We work with Southwest Solutions, the Volunteers of America, Michigan Veterans Foundation, the mayor's office, the list could go on for paragraphs and paragraphs.
Well, I appreciate that, and many of those folks we've considered friends here on Veterans Radio. We've interviewed them and supported their endeavors, so we're glad to be supporting yours. This is a question I think for Nate and Cody. You can each take a turn at answering it. Is what's your vision? What's your hope for the next few years as you continue to work at and work with Pingree Detroit?
Well, listen, Nate, it sort of goes back to the question of how does that feel about the ownership part, and I was just thinking about what better way to have people owning the company are those who are more focused on service, and that's big with a lot of vets that that I've come across and noticed over the years is in the civilian world, we're really focused on just service. Provide a service, and we still have that within us, and having that ownership and going forward, I've always told Jared it's endless possibilities, so going forward it's a lot of possibilities that are going to be opening going forward, and I'm just anticipating it. I'm so geeked right now.
Cody, do you want to comment?
Yeah, sure. I guess for my vision for the future of Pingree, I mean, in a few years, I'm excited to kind of see responsible growth, I guess you could call it. I'm excited to expand our product offering, which will ultimately allow us to hire more people, grow the community, and, you know, improve our bottom line. So, in a responsible way that as Jared explains, isn't always done. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, Jared, you've got a couple of veterans sounding like business entrepreneurs here. Kudos for that. But let's get your vision. What is, as we come to the end here of our time, what do you want to see Pingree Detroit be able to do over the next couple of years?
I'm sure. So there's a 10-year vision, a 20-year vision, and a 5-year vision. And I'll start this next couple since that was the question. Really, right now where we're situated, you know, we're really just over a week away, a week out of launching Detroit's first ever sneakers. And so we've got a really large audience who are looking for other opportunities for footwear. We can literally be creating employment and creating products that don't exist anywhere else. And so my vision looks like there are certain elements where I'd use the term vertical integration, where we can expand the impact, expand how we're creating by producing the elements of the shoe. So certain parts of our footwear have to be imported because no one else is making in the United States. And so we're really excited to explore and expand our own internal capacity to produce here locally to support local manufacturing, as well as expand the audience of how we contribute to our community. And so there are so many things that I'm not really sure yet, but that there are what I would term as community production models that allow us to distribute amongst our neighbors kind of different elements of the process. So certain flowers is a great example. They employ veterans and sponsor the veterans who sell at home. So there's nothing to say that you can't still provide kind of transitional income for folks who can work where they are. We provide them material, we provide them structure, we provide them support. And that looks like us drastically extending our capacity while extending our footprint and doing it in a sustainable way. So all of our processing is non-toxic, which means it's healthy for the worker. We're not breathing fumes, and we're working towards zero waste. You know, we need to be really responsible about the processes we implement and the products that we create. And we don't need more plastic oceans and toxicity in our water. So we're trying to be really intentional. And, you know, at the core, we want to maximize well-being and show that there's a way of doing that, where you can both be profitable and maximize well-being and just create something that makes a difference.
Well, we really want to thank all three of you for taking some time to talk to us on Veterans Radio today. We want to direct our listening audience to pingreedetroit.com. That's P-I-N-G-R-E-E, Detroit.com. You can shop online there. You can learn more about what they're doing. We didn't get a chance to talk about it, but go read about Hazen S. Pingree, who was the mayor of the city of Detroit. He was a businessman and was a bootmaker, which is sort of the history here. Pingree
and a veteran.
And a veteran from the Civil War.
And a veteran, yes.
So it's a very great story. Again, thanks, guys, and best of luck. We hope you enjoyed these two stories about veterans' employment. One from Roush Industries, more traditional, if you will, and one from Pingree Detroit, maybe a little less traditional, but very worthwhile. And it's an interesting concept because back in 2014, when Pingree Detroit was just a spark of an idea, unemployment for veterans was 5.3%. Here in 2018, veteran unemployment has fallen to 3.4% in September of 2018. However, women's unemployment, veterans unemployment, remains stuck at that 5.3% range. So it's going to take all hands on deck to make sure that our veterans get the jobs that they are due, that they fought for, that they need a second chance on. So I think that's a great opportunity for everybody to get back involved. Additionally, I'd point out to you that Google has a new product out to help veterans find civilian jobs that relate to their military jobs. In the military, you're given an MOS or a service code, if you will. And Google's gone ahead and designed a program that takes that military occupational specialty or MOS job title and converts it into jobs that may be available for you in the private sector. So if you go to google.com and put in jobs for veterans, you'll find this app, if you will, and maybe it will help you think about some potential jobs that you weren't aware of. Some are the obvious ones, but others are not. But I think that's also a great product that somebody like a large company like Google can bring to bear, and we'd encourage people to consider using it. So that brings us to the conclusion of today's Veterans Radio program. We want to encourage you to check us out on Facebook. Go to veteransradio.net. Listen to our podcasts.
Send us emails if you have ideas for shows. You can send them to Dale@veteransradio.net or Jim@veteransradio.net. We're always looking for your input on these sorts of things, but it's a great opportunity for you to have some specific input in shaping the direction of the show. And until next time on Veterans Radio, you are dismissed.